This is Mae Brussel, and it's broadcast number 677, November 26, 1984, part two, side two of the World Watchers, KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. Now, Senator Cranston is concerned about the capability of other countries having nuclear weapons, and this actor, Mr. Brazzi, and members of the P2 linked to Licio Gelli, the Nazis in South America, Saudi Arabia are caught wanting to sell nuclear weapons to, in quotes, tease Israel and give the enemies of Israel that could bring on this well-desired and expressed Armageddon. So keeping the separation of the capability of making them and are having them, I want to share with you some information about and this ties into how they get these weapons and who is selling the made atomic bombs. There was the Mitre Technical Report, MITRE, made in 1975 when Reagan was out here in California, in 1966 and 1974. But they were working on a report that was simultaneous and part of the garden plot or the emergency facilities. And there was an organization set up. The report was called The Threat to Licensed Nuclear Facilities on Watching Nuclear Facilities by the Mitre Corporation, McLean, Virginia, government group, a document prepared for authorized distribution only by the Mitre. And there are nine people who wrote reports in September 1975, and I have a biography of each of the men preparing the report for the Mitre on protecting our domestic nuclear facilities so that these little bombs don't get sold for several million dollars to some people to start World War III. And there's a report December the 4th from this group, Nucleonics Week, where they give a summary of their work. One nuclear security incident would trigger a wave of sabotage attempts, they wrote up, this team of people. According to two studies recently completed by the nuclear regulatory consultants, incidentally, William Simon was in charge of Secretary of the Energy, the nuclear energy included. He now is on the board of Helionetics with the direct line to the White House in case of emergencies. And he's also the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, close with the Vatican, working with J. Peter Grace and Claire Luce at another level. But the Vatican is important because of the P2 and the popes, John Paul II and particularly, but even before he came in, this investigation was going on with Montini, Pope Pius VI, and the problem of drug running and narcotics and assassinations and murders, and the P2 was being developed before John Paul even came in. In 1979, they were already investigating these matters. So William Simon has a close link to the Vatican, and in future broadcasts, I'm going to share material with you I got on the use of the Knights of Malta for spies from the CIA to the Vatican. But I don't want to get too far away, but William Simon was in charge of nuclear energy just about the time that this was coming out. It said they wanted reports both studies portray considerable security risks and recommend ways to deal with them. Separate studies were made by the Mitre Corporation and BDM Corporation based in Washington, D.C. They want to follow sabotage and terrorism, the pattern of skyjackings, political kidnappings. Patty Hearst had been just kidnapped in 1974. And they talk about the frustrations of the industrial society to express themselves in group aggression. And what happens is that terrorism follows, and they have to follow and do an analysis of a terrorist threat to commercial nuclear facilities. Despite limited chances for success, they see the BDM wrote a report of a real threat of a potential impact of attempted sabotage, and it said even the most comic opera move on a nuclear facility will bring a specter of nuclear explosion in people's minds and could generate a groundswell of opinion against nuclear power, so you have to be very careful, just like they were mobilized during the Vietnam War. By the 1980s, however, the threat of successful sabotage will be far greater. Operating on the assumption of a continued deterioration of U.S. social and political and economic environment, this is written in 1975, by 1980, you will see a continual deterioration of social, political, and economic environment. Why couldn't we get better in 5 years? Why did we have to deteriorate? And it said, the report sketches a number of scenarios that could produce candidates for nuclear sabotage and terrorist attempts. Disappointed professionals have failed to obtain an expected standard of living. There will be disaffected employees and revolutionaries from the right and left. This is what they see as causing a veritable army of criminals and hoodlums in the country who will be waiting and willing to undertake any activity, including murder, if the profit justifies it. And here's the profit of a well-known actor, a friend of Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, selling for millions of dollars atomic bombs. But this is their script in 1975, and we're getting closer to it now. It says their ruthless and sophisticated techniques and methods have been convincingly demonstrated in thousands of skillfully executed crimes. There will be tens of thousands of killers and criminals that have been trained. The greed knows no bounds over all of these people, and including men of organized crime. The situation is more dangerous because of the leaders of organized crime, and they alone don't have absolute control over thousands of criminals and killers that the crime syndicate has trained. Look how close we're getting to this one. They recommend monitoring contacts between the United States criminals and foreign terrorist groups, which were set up by our CIA and their right-wing group. And they give a list of ways to protect the nuclear plants, anticipating problems are going to happen. Now, one of the men on this study for the threat to license nuclear facilities is Waldo H. Duberstein, who worked with Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel, and they were exporting weapons overseas, and he has a background here that comes from the Mitra group, describing Dr. Duberstein. Now, this is a man who they said blew his brains out. His bile was coming out of his stomach and his head was blown off with a big shotgun. He was about to testify about his role with Edwin Wilson, but he worked with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and Wilson works with Frank Turpel, who was in St. Peter's. Frank Turpel has said he helped train Aja. So we have a Wilson-Turpel CIA going to the Vatican and the plans to kill the Pope at that time, to make him a hero, a martyr, kill one of your own, blame the KGB and the Bulgarians. We don't care which area we have our war. That was one of the scripts. But down to Waldo Duberstein, it says his education. Dr. Duberstein did his undergraduate work at St. John's College. He graduated from Concordia Lutheran Seminary, a master's in history, a PhD in Oriental Studies from the University of Chicago. What is he doing with the Mitra group on nuclear facilities? He's not a scientist, from what I see, but he is providing weapons for the Armageddon and the war. Interesting enough, let me give you once more his education, undergraduate work at St. John's in classical and language studies, graduated from Concordian Lutheran Seminary, wherever that is, a master's in history, a PhD in Oriental Studies from the Middle East, and the University of Chicago. And here he is with these scientists on the Office of Emergency Preparedness for atomic weapons being taken or stolen and nuclear regulatory problems. His employment from 1974 to the present. Interesting enough, they start at the present, then work back. Maybe I should start at the bottom and work up. In 1947 to 1970, when the CIA was formed, he served in the Central Intelligence Agency in assessing and interpreting international development of the Middle East. Southeast Asia had direct responsibility for reporting Southeast Asia and Far East information up to 1970, straight through from 47 to 1940, and wrote situation reports for top U.S. officials. 1970-71, he was a professor of international relations at the faculty of the National War College. Isn't it cute how he lines up with Edwin Wilson later? Director of International Studies for the American Enterprise Institute of Public Policy Research in Washington, which I'm sure is a CIA dummy front. I'll look it up. The International Studies for the American Enterprise Institute, AEI, I've seen that before. I have to see who's on the board of that one. Public Policy in Washington. 1972-73 Special Assistant to the Director of the Office of National Narcotic Intelligence. Now, he pipes into the very people who are drug running, who are killing, who link to the Nazis, who traffic in drugs. He's on the National Narcotics Intelligence and the Department of Justice, assisted in planning the office's operations, represented the director whenever required, and supervised the desk with the analysis division. In 1973-74, he was professor of international relations at the National War College. He was in Southeast Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa. In 1974, to when the report worked, he worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency. 74 would be when our friend Mr. Daniel Graham, who's the head of Star Wars, was head of the he was chief of Defense Intelligence Agency, and then shares his offices with Fritz Kramer, the mentor of Alexander Haig, who's working with Michael Ledeen. We'll go into those characters. You know the names. But this is Waldo Duberstein on the threat to licensed nuclear facilities, and I bring it now up now because of his connection to those very people that are sending the weapons and making it able to for them to have those weapons that he is supposed to be protecting. Now, in the book, The Death Merchant, there's just a few pages that I'll refer to Mr. Duberstein to give you a little background on his demise at the time. It's a book about Edwin Wilson. This is written by Joseph Gould and just came out this year. The Death Merchant, The Rise and Fall of Edwin Wilson. Another person caught in the investigative net was Waldo Duberstein, the Defense Intelligence Agency expert on Middle East, who passed information to Edwin Wilson and then the Libyans beginning in 1977. He has a career from 1947 up to 75, all the way from the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Nuclear Regulatory, nuclear bombs. Now he's with Edwin Wilson overseas. The case against Duberstein was tight. He admitted, Bobby Barnes admitted paying him $1,000 travel expenses to Libya, and Douglas Schlachter testified to the grand jury he was the conduit for documents he passed to Edwin Wilson. Schlachter produced a selection of the documents which counterintelligence agents traced to Duberstein. Some had his fingerprints, some had fingerprints of Duberstein's German-born girlfriend. I wonder if she fits to the werewolves and to Mr. Brotzi and the shipping off of those weapons. To the grand jury, the old man said he was innocent. Any work he did for Wilson was as a private consultant, and no classified material ever left his hands. That's what he said. But since that entire paragraph in the documents was lifted verbatim from secret and top secret DIA papers, Duberstein's defense rang hollow. And in this book on Edwin Wilson, it tells how Duberstein, late in April 73, now 75 years old, went to a store in Virginia and bought himself a box of ammunition and went into the basement. He met with his lawyers and talked about his four decades of intelligence work, sat down in the basement. He was supposed to appear in court at 9 a.m. on April 29th, 1983, to testify about Edwin Wilson and the work that he had done for four decades from the CIA, the Defense Intelligence, the Nuclear Regulatory, giving all of this overseas to Edwin Wilson and the CIA branch overseas, and Frank Turpel, their partners. He was supposed to appear in court. He didn't appear in court. He had a 12-gauge shotgun in his mouth. He blew away most of his head, and as it says, the bile was rising in his throat. That was the end of Duberstein. Now, this connection of these various characters is very, very important, and probably one of the most significant articles that just came out recently is The New Statesman, September 21st, 1984, Wanted, Men Enjoying Power. And this is about the P2 Lodge. Many of you are new listeners, are not familiar with it, the Propaganda Dewey Lodge. And I've hit on it weeks at a time, not just recently, but a long time ago when this story first broke, the interconnecting links. But for those of you who aren't familiar, and this article is very important, I'm going to share most of it with you and some verbatim to lay the groundwork then for the other stories that will follow this week and next week. It's about a woman investigator, Tina Anselmi, A-N-S-E-L-M-I, who has spent years trying to find out about this secret lodge. The background goes to June 1981, after the discovery of a list of names of members of Propaganda 2, P2. It contained 962 names of people 422 of whom are public servants. Now, you can absolutely say in the United States of America that you have about 962 people that want and working for a military coup, that are in key positions for the emergency service, for the germs to drop, for the terrorism to begin, as the excuse to have a coup, which Licio Gelli planned in Italy, and by a fluke didn't go through, but he works with and through Reagan and the Reagan administration, the Vatican, with the same connecting link. So Italy has had, I'm sure they still do, 422 were paid by the public on the payroll to sabotage the government. And the reason they're important is that the CIA set all of this up in the first place, first the OSS and then the CIA, letting the Nazi criminals escape, incorporating them into the system, and so forth. It said the best known man working in the government right now is Pietro Longo, a leader of the pro-American, anti-communist Italian Social Democratic Party. And anything that is anti-communist to our government can be Genghis Khan or Machiavelli. Any murder, it doesn't matter. If they're anti-communist, they're pro-American. That's the only standard. The commission was established. They established the higher echelon of the Treasury, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Foreign Trade had all been penetrated. It's like our Secretary of the Treasury, when Nixon was president, was Donald Kennedy. Strong links to the Mormon Church, working with Michael Sindona from the Vatican, completely under control, or William Simon, the Secretary of the Treasury, former one in the United States. In Italy, the Treasury, the police force, the armed forces. This article says of the 169 high-ranking officers involved since the scandal broke in 1981, 111 have been cleared by internal security, clearing each other. The former head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was also cleared. He was working at NATO with Alexander Haig. They have given their word of honor. They didn't have anything to do with the P2. Their names are on there. 16 judges are involved. I can name 16 judges in this country. 13 were subjected to disciplinary proceedings. 2 were expelled, 7 demoted, and 4 cleared. The government has recently decided not to proceed against the middle-ranking people. The top generals have resigned. The government seems to think the case is closed, but everyone knows the show will run on and on, because this commission is scratching the surface of a scandal. Now, this is where we get into the gun running again and the Nazis and atomic bombs. And atomic bombs to wipe out a country, to begin a holy war. This is why it's so important. The problem is that matters pertaining to this are beginning to scratch the surface of a scandal, and it is connected virtually to every major unsavory aspect of the life of the Italian Republic. Attempted coups, political assassinations, right-wing, left-wing terrorism, mafia. Nor is this confined to Italy. There are important Latin American, U.S. connections. Incidentally, and not separate from this, and speaking of coups in the USA, there's a new book out by Jim Hogan, H-O-U-G-A-N, who wrote Spooks on Watergate. And some friends in the East have read it. They told me to be sure and read it and do some broadcasts on it. But in that book comes in the essence of a possible coup in 1972 when Richard Nixon was to be reelected. And he emphasizes in there a lot of information about the nesting or the plans for a coup. And that's what Watergate was really about, and I'll do more later. It was to kill Richard Nixon and make Spiro Agnew, with his Nazi connections, his Greek connections, fit into Licio Gelli, not separate, but apart. So simultaneously in this country, we have had coups where the president's head was blown off, where the candidate for the election in 68 had his head blown off, the bullets in the head, and major candidates die by poison or cancer, suspicious circumstances that I think. And so that in Italy, they are always in the background of having this fascist coup run by the Gestapo, a member of the SS, Licio Gelli, and who headed Mussolini's, the equivalent of the Gestapo. And they make a point in this article that it does link to the United States, and that is what I've been trying to say is going on. The Anselmo Commission, this article said, tried to piece together the career of the mysterious Licio Gelli, presumed to be South America. Gelli was active in the SS in Italy. Shortly afterwards, he pretended to be helping the partisans until he could get out. He fled and then came back later in the 50s. Little is known of his activities until 1963. After 63, a lot of changes happened because when John Kennedy was murdered and we had our coup, other people began to surface and feel secure. Once that was accomplished and they could hold the line with Oswald and the Earl Warren, that's not in the article, but the date is significant because that is the year that we had our coup. And they said that little was known of him. He was quiet until 63. He was for a period in Argentina. He had contacts with fascist and Nazi exiles as well as the Argentine Masonic group. And back in Italy, he was a businessman and he joined the Freemasons. He felt comfortable in 63. In 1966, he entered that secret propaganda to P2 Lodge. Since then, he's been involved with subversion, and the report says that he was connected with a deft left-wing publisher, Mr. Feltrinelli, in 1971, just as Ajax killed a leftist publisher in Greece and was sprung out of jail to continue with the Nazis in Grey Wolves when he left Turkey. And he's been charged with the founding of the Red Brigades. That's in this story. I say the SLA is a CIA. And what I said 10 years ago is what you're reading now. What I wrote in 74 is what they were doing. When I wrote that article in 74, in 75, he was starting his subversion and the activities that we were getting out here with the SLA. And the only thing that broke it up here temporarily, as I say, was the Watergate arrest and the exposés and the various congressional committees investigating it at the time. This story says Jelly kept up his contacts with his attempted right-wing coup in Italy. It was planned in December 70 under the leadership of Prince Valerio Borghese. I've done broadcasts on Borghese. He was directly involved in the assassination of John Kennedy through Permandex, through Clay Shaw in New Orleans, and Mr. Bloomfield up in Montreal. The Borghese, Valerio Borghese, close associations to Otto Skorzeny, and the Odessa Nazi money in Madrid, then missing millions. It's a big part of this story, too. This is a who's who that ties together. That's why I'm going so slowly. Many of the elements that I've talked about separately, but I'm going to, because of this fine research the men have done that have sent me these various articles, I'm going to try and put it into a thing that you can understand and then chart it out for you. But you know the name Borghese. The book The Kennedy Conspiracy by Paris Flammond mentions Borghese. And this mentions the date 1963 when he surfaces again and he's with Skorzeny and Borghese. I mentioned them in my Rebel article on the Nazis behind the murder of John Kennedy. You'll find Skorzeny, Borghese, and 1963, when our president's head was blown up, is when these guys begin to feel home free and ready to run to home base and have it if they could. I'm quoting, these are articles. This is one article from the New Statesman, September 21st, 1984. The secret operations were part of a project. They were aimed at destabilizing the Italian democracy by terrorism to pave the way for a strong state. And maybe I'll take one sentence at a time, and like, you know, Mae Brussels style. This is exactly what the SLA thing was about. This is why the germ warfare is out now. The botulism is being sold. This is why the manual is coming out on how to kill and assassinate in the prisons. Destabilize us, and that's why in 1975, you take that year, that's when the atomic energy, the Mitre Corporation for the government with Mr. Doberstein was writing reports, and in 1983, Doberstein and earlier was working with Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple and Aja. Take the destabilization in America and the American agents that were working with each other, what I wrote in 1974, and look at the years of 63 and 75 and the way the atomic group describes the chaos that's going to come to this country, and when it comes will be destabilized. Just as they, when Harry Truman went into the South Korean War, he had a time limit when they would get out. This report that the Mitre group wrote is on that destabilization process and how it happens and the unemployment and how we're going to get worse. And as I say, how did they know in 1974 that we were going to get worse? But that's part of the high deficit, the unemployment, and no housing is to create the chaos, and people will demand the strong state because if you have anarchy, you can't get your act together. Back to the article. By 1975, Jelly realized that the one strategy he was working on for the destabilization at that time wasn't going well. He was no longer involved in terrorist activities, although he helped form the Red Brigades, and Edwin Wilson Frank Turbo helped the Japanese Red Army and the IRA. The United States government keeps funding the CIA, the IRA, and the so-called the Baader-Meinhof, all links to the intelligence communities in their own countries and linked to Carlos and the CIA and Samuel Cummings of the CIA in London, getting the terrorism in order to have the response. He decided then that he was established low-level contacts with his organization. He had penetrated the military, the political, and the financial establishments. His sphere of activity was not only Italian. He moved to Argentina, where he was down there active with the Argentine government. In November 72, he personally chartered the plane that brought Perón back to Argentina, and he accompanied there. His reward was the post of commercial counselor of the Argentine embassy in Rome, and he was able to control the whole Italian-Argentine trade and the arms trade. Incidentally, the new ambassador to the White House from the Vatican, Mr. Luigi, have you read that he worked with the Argentine death squads and military junta and attended the death camps, and he now represents the Vatican in Washington. We have said our Knight of Malta, William Wilson, to the Vatican as an envoy to brief the Pope on CIA matters, and we have a man from the Argentine death squads that the Pope has sent to us to represent the Vatican. Those stories came out this week, and of course, Argentine is the haven of the Nazis. I see I'm not going to have time on this broadcast even to finish the article on the New Statesman. Next week, I think no matter what the news, unless there's something really shocking, I'll continue till time runs out, and then go back to this because this story lays the groundwork for the rest that follows. It tells about his contacts. They were important. He was praised officially by the former head of the Argentine Navy, Admiral Massaro, for having helped them with the Falklands War. Incidentally, Mr. Orfea from the Organization of American States was Argentine's ambassador to Washington for 20 years when the Nazis were carefully taking over, since World War II, the government in Argentina, and he's now a vice president on the Robert Keith Gray Company in Washington, D.C., the one that bailed out our would-be attorney general's wife, Ursula Meese, and is a home office of William Casey, another Knight of Malta spy, the director of the CIA, and Paul Laxalt, the office of Gray, has the Argentine ambassador and also from the Organization of American States. He had both jobs, 20 years from Argentine, and down in Argentine with Licio Gelli. See, Mr. Gray put on the inauguration ball for, helped put that on for Ronald Reagan, and Licio Gelli was at the inauguration, but he comes from the Argentine military junta, and that's how Licio Gelli gets invited, because Argentine, Robert Keith Gray, and Ronald Reagan and the Vatican are very close. In fact, it was Gray's idea that we have the envoy to the Vatican. So he was honored down there, and he helped them obtain further Exocet missiles for Argentine by way of Peru, because Banco Ambrosiano had banks in Peru. He used the Banco Andonino of Lima. The bank belonged to the boss, Roberto Calvi, who was later killed in London, and he was helpful in the Argentine Nazis trying to win the Falklands War against the British. This is Licio Gelli from Italy with the P2, close to the man just indicted on the plans to kill the Pope, friend of Ronald Reagan's, co-actor, didn't make movies with him, but close to him and Sinatra since 1947. This is a complicated group of people, but next week I'm going to continue with this and go on the groundwork of terror from the right, the murders, the assassination, the coups, and the way it relates to what happened to our country earlier in 63 and in 1975 and the stepping stones to 1984 with the terrorist manuals in the prison, the botulism, and the germ warfare at our door. There's no time for more now. I purposely, as I said, went slowly. I'll be back with you next week. It is May Brussel, KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.